At the beginning of our gospel text today, if we look in reverse, which you don't unfortunately have in your bulletins, but if you look at the very beginning of the chapter, Jesus asks his disciples a question. Who do you say that I am? The disciples respond, some say John, others say Jeremiah. Jesus asks them again, but who do you say that I am? Who do you say that I am? Now, this seems actually like a harmless question that Jesus asks the disciples, but it turns out to be quite a challenge to Peter and to the others. You see, up until now, the sacrifices of them leaving everything behind to follow the person who could possibly be the Messiah, or at least a darn good teacher, were proving to be fruitful. The disciples watched as Jesus fed the multitude, cast out demons, healed the sick, and even walked on water. This Jesus was their hope. Hope to end all kinds of oppression. Hope for freedom. Hope that this would be the end of a miserable world and an issuing end to the reign of peace and of justice. So then Peter, who feels like he's really made this great revelation, answers Jesus honestly when he asks, who do you say that I am? Excitingly, Peter says, you are the Messiah. Proud of me, right, Jesus? I figured it out. But instead of affirming Peter for figuring this out, Jesus actually admonishes Peter and his disciples to never tell anyone about it. Yeah, good for you, but don't tell anyone. Worse yet, Jesus then tells them how he's going to be tortured, rejected, killed, and after 3 days of death and decay, rise again. By now, Peter is completely challenged. But you're the Messiah. You're supposed to be powerful. You're supposed to bring in the reign of justice and peace. So, naturally, he rebukes Jesus. But Jesus then tells Peter, get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things. Jesus calls to the surrounding crowd, if any of you want to become my followers, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. So the Messiah, well, who might be the Messiah, but you're not supposed to call him the Messiah, is actually not going to maybe be a conqueror of all, and he's going to die. That's not confusing at all, is it? I'm really sorry, Jesus, but my initial response to this passage is to be on Team Peter. Shouldn't our faith protect us from suffering? Shouldn't it make us conquerors over threats to our spirituality or our sanity? Shouldn't it make us acceptable to a crowd? The promise of suffering, the promise of self-denial and the loss of one's life is not necessarily a way to win friends and influence people, let alone get them to follow you into this path. Surely, Jesus, you the Messiah, must have had a misunderstanding in this. What we expect from God is comfort, a shelter from loneliness, a shelter from sadness, anger, and betrayal, an avoidance of the pain of the cross, not a carrying of one's own. Good teacher, healer of the sick or not, why would anyone want to follow a man doomed to the kind of death that a crucifixion has? Hasn't there been enough suffering without this? Peter's rebuke of Jesus is one and the same to our own instinct for survival, our own longing for security and longevity of life. And Peter has a point, too. Don't we want our God to be invincible? Don't we want to be able to say that we are made in the image of a controlling, self-sufficient, omnipotent, unshakable God, the God who shares divine power with us? But the image of Christ dying on a cross is what we receive today. And it comes with a revelation that God can be vulnerable and can indeed suffer. And while it is very tempting to reject this notion as Peter does, let us for a moment look at the real Christ and the real power of Christ. The real Christ was not the Messiah who came waving a sword and who came in power and great glory and is going to triumph over all evil, but the one who came in the most vulnerable and humblest of states. Christ the Messiah's power comes in his willingness to stand in the face of sin, to stand in the face of death, to undergo suffering and to rise up on the other side. This is the kind of God that we encounter in today's gospel. And this God finds strength in the depths of weakness and triumph in the throngs of defeat. This may seem foolish to us who measure strength by membership or broadness of numbers or gross national product or nuclear forces. Yet the Bible bears witness to this necessary shift in paradigm for us. We must learn to see God in a different light. The story of Abram and Sarai is not just a story about a name change, as we see in Genesis, where they become Abraham and Sarah. This is a story about a husband and wife who had no hope. They were barren, they were broken, and they were too old even to think about reproducing anymore. To the point, actually, where Sarai offered her Egyptian maid just so they could have at least somebody to carry on the bloodline. Yet, through the most dire of circumstances, God creates the nation of Israel and other nations out of these almost 100-year-old people. God uses them in their moments of weakness. This God is the God who hears the cry of the hungry and the oppressed. This God is the God who looks after the orphaned and the widow who suffers in agony. This God was born of an unmarried girl. This God spent his early years as an immigrant in a foreign town and his adult years as a vagrant. This God spent his earthly life dining with tax collectors and sinners and touching the unclean. This God was the God that was tortured and executed as a felon. And even upon rising, his friends had a hard time recognizing and reconnecting with him. This God is the God that calls us. This God. And as we and Peter follow him on this Lenten journey to the cross, we too will discover the depths of God's love and the power of God's purpose. I had a seminary professor once who said that the profound message of the Messiah was this, that there is one who has moved into our vulnerability, who has moved into our guilt, our alienation, our suffering, our death. God claims our weaknesses as a resource for divine power and our wounds as a potential means of healing. So why would we take up our own cross and follow this crucified Christ? Just as we see in the Genesis passage today, the scales fell from the eyes of Abraham and Sarah so that they could see God's greater plan. And we too can see in that shift of thinking, that paradigm shift, in this different understanding of God, the vulnerability of God, we can see in that that God is at work. And God's work means that we no longer need to hide behind names or statuses. God's work means that we can drop the masks that we carry on of control and the facades of power. God's work means that we can come clean with our own frailty. This is because we have the assurance that God has done this before. God has been vulnerable and frail before we were even born. And God can carry the weight and the pain of our own crosses to bear. Now, please don't hear this homily as a tongue-in-cheek way of saying that whenever you have grief, you can give it to Jesus. Or if you follow closely enough to God, God will set you free from all your struggles and sickness. Or my least favorite one, God doesn't give us any more than we can handle. While there are elements of truth in those sayings, they lack the true meaning of God's willingness to be vulnerable in the world. What I mean is this. When we stand with the Christ who was crucified, our suffering, our sin, and even our deaths don't get the last word. When we stand with the Christ who was crucified, our suffering, our death, doesn't get the last word. Yes, they still loom around. They even did in Jesus' time. Evil, greed, hate, fury, violence, arrogance, bigotry, political unrest, fear, and yes, even death. They were there during his life, and they were there as he hung on the cross, and as he breathed his last, they were there. You can almost hear them whispering in his ear, "We won. We won." But unlike Peter, we today can hear the message of Jesus' words that 3 days later, he lives again. That 3 days later, there's a resurrection. I invite you during this Lenten season to examine your own lives, to discover the presence of this both powerful and vulnerable God who lives in us, not in spite of our brokenness and not in spite of our humanity, but in the midst of us, in the midst of that humanity, of that brokenness. And as we make our journey toward Easter, may we be blessed in knowing that there is always going to be resurrection amongst defeat, and that with God, brokenness can only result in wholeness again. Amen.